so I'm Joel Teague. There's a lot of people I don't know. I was told there would be about five people, pretty much family. So hopefully this will work out. There is some family, but lots of people I don't know too. That's cool. I'm happy about that. I'm excited about that. I'm a missionary to France. I don't know what you know about France, but I won't have that much time to talk about it. But I was also raised as a missionary kid in France, so you can feel sorry for me about that. I hope what I share will help you a little bit, maybe give you some insight. Hopefully you'll learn a little bit of something that can help you. If you don't learn anything, I would love to hear about your ministry as soon as we're done, because that means you've already gone through a lot of things that I've gone through, and I'd love to share that with you and talk with you if you have that. I'm going to jump in pretty fast. We don't have that much time. I have a lot of things I want to talk about. I could have talked about so many things. It's such a huge topic. I had to go ahead and narrow it down and choose something, so I hope this will be helpful for you. It's just some things we've been working with and thinking about over the years as we minister in France, so I hope that'll help you a little bit. And at the end, if we have time, and if you're good, there'll be a video. I don't know if we'll make it. We'll see. We'll see if it works out time-wise. Let me see. Oops, sorry. My computer's already not working with me. There you go. You probably know this. In France, there's a big population of atheists. A lot of people that would consider themselves as atheists, some agnostic, but it's a really common worldview if you go around and ask people what they believe. So out of all the worldviews, there's many. I don't know how many you know of, but the materialistic story of evolution has really received the widest acceptance by the French people. And unfortunately, this belief system, it's been uncritically accepted by pretty much everybody, but also by the educational system and by the media that really pushes atheism. I grew up in the school, so just like Lidi, my wife, did, and we saw it, you know, through school how they push atheism on you from a young age to a point where most people don't even think it's questionable. And that's why I actually wrote this. I said, for many, it's the truth with a capital T. It's a truth that you can't really question. It's a truth that you can't challenge for many people. In a testimony, that if I'll show it at the end, you'll see it. Mary, her name is, she said she didn't even imagine that we could question the origin of life through evolution and through chance. So that's where lots of people are in France. That's their situation. That's what we're trying to deal with. Why is it? Because their teachers told them so. Their parents told them so. TV tells them that. And pretty much everybody around them believes that also. And so we're in that situation. You believe it's the truth, and it must be right. It's really hard to get out of the box and question when you're in that kind of situation. Of course, trying to do ministry in those kind of contexts is not simple. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things that can get in our way. I'll list a few just to start. I'll go ahead and get the bad stuff out of the way, maybe. In many atheist cultures, you will be considered as a cult because they don't really know who we are, what we're doing. They don't know our background. In France, by most people consider that we are a cult. And so as a pastor, I'm the cult leader, so that's exciting. I used to be a computer programmer. Now I'm a cult leader. So I don't know. Is that up or down the ladder? What do you guys think? I don't know. But you know, it's a way to open conversations with those that are willing to talk and explain. There's a lot of social pressure, more than you can imagine. Families, friends. We actually have families do interventions on people that come to our church. They invite them for a family meal and then gang up on them and try to convince them not to come to our church anymore because they've been pulled into a cult. And I don't even know what they think is going to happen to them, but that's just how they see us, and that's how much pressure there is. And that's very hard for people to go counter culture and counter that pressure that they have every day at work, at school, at home, especially when the family and friends gang up on them. That really gets difficult. And we have seen people be pulled away from the church because of that. There's discrimination. We especially when we're trying to rent facilities for events. We're trying to do a next event, and for some reason, they won't give us a date, and they're always like, call back next month, call back next month. And it just happens to us all the time when we're trying to place to have church. It took us a year, and over and over, people would say, oh, it's for a church, you're a Christian, no, we don't want to rent to you. And just over and over, it just makes it so hard. So we've been dealing with that a lot. There's also a lot of attacks, you know, when you're trying to promote events and stuff like that. There's a lot of promotion groups on Facebook or on internet, and we put our events on there, and they take them off. You can see all kinds of crazy things on those things, but we can't have one of our events on there, which just seems crazy. But because they think we're a cult, they don't want that on there. People tearing down posters because they see our posters downtown about our events. They don't like it. They'll rip them off the walls. When we do promo on Facebook, we do that a lot. people commenting, oh, that's a cult for sure, you know, on our, that's always exciting. You know, you post a nice promo up and somebody first comment is like, oh, that's a cult for sure. That's always difficult. So we have to deal with those kind of things. And some attacks are actually personal. And we had a young lady come to our church and her mom got scared. It's like, oh, it's a cult. You're getting pulled in. She talked with her. She wouldn't listen. She kept coming to our church. So what the mom did, she started Googling me, just Googling my name everywhere, looking me up, finding everything she could. And you can find a lot of stuff. I'm not hiding very well. And she started, anything she could find, she was printing it out. She even found the I Am mission, the I Am website in the States, and found our prayer letters and started printing those out, underlining, marking things out. I don't know if there's pictures of me on the wall. I don't know about that. But she was after me, and she was trying to prove to her daughter by all these things that we're a cult and that, you know, we're going to do evil. So you do face some pretty incredible things. That's why there's no newsletters of ours on the I Am website anymore, because we don't want to let people use those against us. So I'm sorry there's not anymore. It's a spiritual battle. You know, of course, they don't realize it, but we know that. It's a spiritual battle. You're in warfare, and there's a lot of things going on. There's the huge temptation of the sinful life that surrounds them. That's a big deal. We feel like they're pulled. As soon as they start coming to church or coming to Christ, they're pulled back by their sinful lifestyle, by the culture. And it's like a tug-of-war fight to try to keep them. And it's like they're fighting the other way. The culture is trying to pull them. The enemy is trying to attack them. And it's just a big tug-of-war, big, big spiritual warfare. So you need to expect that. If you're going to be ministering in this kind of, in a culture where there's a lot of atheists or completely atheistic culture, you got to expect that the culture is going to pull back and the enemy is going to attack. That's a fact, and that's what's going to happen. But that's okay. God's on our side. We'll be fine. But you need to be prepared for that. So that's the good news. Now we're going to get to the bad news. No, that's true. But the way things are going, I do want to say that. I think we are going to be confronted in the USA to a lot of things we are confronted to at the moment in France. Some people say it's the same. No, it's not the same. But the way things are going, I do think that we are going to start seeing the same things over time. Hopefully not. You know, I pray that not, but it may very well be, especially with the younger generation where they're very pushed also towards atheism and liberalism. The media, the social media is crazy. It's going to be very complicated. Certain groups of people now already consider Christians in the States as all kinds of things. They accuse us of being, you know, religious extremists or racists or homophobes, whatever. I mean, you can make a list of your own, I'm sure. I'm sure if you've heard everything. So it might be different in France, but I do feel that the gap is kind of closing in. So these are things that you're going to need to understand and try to use in France, in the States, in the times to come. So I want to say, after saying all that, I'll say, okay, great. What do we do? That's the situation. It's tough. It's not easy. It's not an easy place to minister. I'm sure that's very encouraging for our two young guys that are about to come to France. I said, pray and follow the Holy Spirit. Thank you very much. I hope that helps. Have a good day. No, but thank you for coming. That's good, definitely. We all know that. I don't need to tell you that, I'm sure. I did want to say it, but doing that does not dismiss us from learning, doesn't dismiss us from improving what we do, and doesn't dismiss us from doing our homework and understanding the culture and what we need to do in our culture. And I'm going to share some ideas, some concepts that have helped us over the years. We've been there for a long time. We've been doing different things that I think will be useful and can be useful in any context, no matter where we are and no matter who we're trying to reach. Pretty much now, anywhere you go, you're going to find some atheist people you're going to try to reach. So you're going to need to know what to do and how you can do things. So I'm going to talk about a little bit of our experience, some of the key things that are really key for us to reach out to the atheist people. At first, I wasn't going to mention this first point because it's just so obvious again. And maybe everything I'm going to say may be obvious to you. I don't know. And I didn't even make a slide for it. That shows how much I didn't plan about talking about it. But it's loving them. I got to say it. We have to love the people we're trying to reach. And that's, of course, obvious, but it has to start there. Before we talk about anything else, maybe concepts and ideas and strategy, no matter what that might be, it has to start with loving them. You know, Paul in 1 Corinthians, he talks extensively about love and how we can do all kinds of amazing things, but if we don't do it in love, he said, we gain nothing. We're like a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. We're just noise. We're not doing anything. And we all know that. We've all heard those Bible verses, I'm sure, more times than you can even count. But sometimes I do feel like there's like kind of a division. There's this mentality of those people, and there's the us and there's them. That's a problem. kind of like if the atheists were the bad guys. You're like, what? Who? Christians? No, not us. Not you guys, but other people, of course. And especially in these divisive times, I see it more and more. I mean, all the political things going on, how divisive things are, how things are polarized, it's crazy. And we got to be careful, you know, and guard our hearts about that. That mentality cannot exist in the church if we want to reach the atheists and the non-believers. We got to remember, they're sinners just as we are. And they're also lost just as we were before we found Jesus Christ. We have to remember that. They're not the enemy. They've been deceived by the enemy. They're blindly following the enemy and they don't even know it. The enemy is called the father of all lies. He's called the deceiver for a good reason. They're just following blindly that deceiver. So we need to make sure we always look at people, you know, it's like through Jesus' eyes, with love and compassion, how he looked at the sinners. If there's anybody that could look down at sinners, it would have been Jesus. But what did he do? He looked at them with love and compassion and went up to them and tried to understand, talked with them. That's what we need to do. Otherwise, I don't think the rest of what I'm going to talk about is really going to do much good if we don't start right there. So maybe sometimes we need to pray that God gives us more love and compassion for the lost, for the atheists. I think so. We all need that so we can do that. So that's a prerequisite. Okay, that doesn't count. That doesn't even count in my time, I don't think. I think we're good. We can keep going. Just if you need to pray for that. But now we're going to move on, and I'm going to talk about a little bit about our experience and some of the key things that we've seen in reaching people. And the first one, again, it seems really simple. It's understanding them. It may seem obvious and very simple. The idea is simple, but that does not mean it's simple to do. It's not always obvious to do. We got to do our best to understand the people we're trying to reach. Not just, well, you know, I understand they don't believe in God. That's great. That's not going to get us very far. That's not going to help us very much. We need to seek to understand them in a really deep way, in a deeper way, of their thinking process, of their beliefs, of their fears, of everything. I don't know how else we can really communicate effectively to those people. It's not a superficial thing. We really have to learn. We got to understand a lot of things. I'm going to list a few, but you could keep going. Their context. When you understand the context they live in. Got to understand their upbringing. That is super important. We've seen that more and more when we talk with people. How much influence their upbringing had. How they were raised. Also, what their parents' culture was. That's important, too, to go up another generation. That gives a lot of great information, great insight. What their parents believed, but also what they believed as a kid. It's funny, we talk with people, and as Lydia does that a lot, my wife, she'll ask them, well, what did you believe as a kid? And often, they'll remember they believed in God as a kid, naturally. And they're shocked, actually, that they forgot. Like, wow, I did believe in God as a kid. And then she goes, okay, so what made that change? What happened? What's the process? And that's amazing. That gets them thinking. Lots of times they realize they don't really know. They just kind of followed the flow. But that's a great way to get them thinking. Their school system, that's huge to understand. The school system, in French, I know it too much. How they're taught, what they're taught, all that, of course, is very important. Their culture, that's huge. There's so much in the culture now with social media, TV, everything. We're so influenced by all that. It's just crazy. I also put history. I guess the United States, I feel like, don't have that much history. If you learn history in France, you got so much to learn. They've been there forever. Here, not as much. It's a little shorter. But it's so important to understand the history, the events, what has happened, what has influenced the beliefs in the country. And in France, the religious history, there's a lot of stuff that's happened. A lot of things have been going on. For example, 500 years ago, there was a war between people that claimed to be Protestants and the Catholics. And it was bloody. I mean, they were killing themselves, real war. I mean, it was crazy. And so I was trying to say, just to give us perspective, try to imagine if in the States, the two biggest denominations start a war. They start killing each other, bloody war, killing each other. It's hard to imagine, maybe. I'm not saying the same thing. Just try to give you an idea of what happened for the people in that context. I do think that would strongly influence how people would view Christianity, don't you? If the main people were fighting, killing each other, they'd be like, what is this? That's what happened in France. And we have to take that into consideration when we talk with people, because they have that in the back of their mind. Oh, Christians, oh yeah, you're the ones that kill each other. That has a huge impact, and it does 500 years later. People still know about that. They learn about it in school, and that does not help us the way they teach it in school, for sure. But try to understand the history, the religious history, and how that impacted their worldviews, how that impacted their beliefs. Try to find out, maybe in your ministry, in your context, What are the things that have had a big impact on people's beliefs, on their worldview, how they see Christianity and how they see Christians? What they believe about God, about the gospel, and how they see Christianity, unfortunately, is linked. Even if we act crazy, and even if we act in a crazy way, if we claim to be Christians, that is going to influence how they see God and how they see the gospel. And of course, we gotta understand what they believe, and we gotta understand why they believe it. It's almost as important to understand why they believe what they believe than what they believe. What their thinking process has been through their whole life to bring them to that conclusion. So everything you can think of that has created or influenced their worldview is important when you're gonna try to communicate the gospel to them. And through all that, it's important also to understand, to identify their fears. There's a lot of fears about us. When they think you're a cult, there's all kinds of fears. Their misunderstandings, that's very important when you're trying to communicate, because if you say a word and they're understanding something else, that's gonna be a problem. You need to understand their misunderstandings. And also, they have a lot of preconceptions, biases, about God, about Christianity, about Christians, about religion as a whole, even for many people. So it's important to understand that so we can address them and help them move forward. So all those things are crucial. That's a lot of stuff. Like I said, you have to do your homework. It takes a little bit of time, but we need to understand all those things. And from all that, we can do our best to adapt our ministries and adapt our way of communicating to the people. And by doing that, we can limit some of those barriers. We can limit some of those fears through our ministry and through our communication. I wrote a side note, but I think that's true in every ministry, is patience is going to be essential. And we don't like that. I would like to share the gospel and have them pray after me. That's not going to happen when you're dealing with an atheist in most 99% of the cases. In most cases, it takes a long time for somebody to completely change their worldview. And I have many examples. Even my wife, Lydia, she knows about it. It took her years. In France, for most people, it takes years to change their whole worldview around. It may be hard for you to understand, but it asks them. I mean, they have to change so many things in their life, in their way of thinking, to go from an atheistic worldview to a Christian worldview. It takes processing time. It takes making changes, taking decisions, and changing those things in your life every step of the way as you work your way towards the gospel. And one thing that I think is interesting in trying to get just a quick grasp on what somebody believes, on their worldview, on their belief system, is to ask them the four fundamental questions about life. You may know these, the origin of life, the origin of everything, where everything came from, the purpose, what's the purpose of life, why am I here, is there a meaning to my life, morality, of course, how do you define right from wrong, how do you decide what is right and what is wrong. These give you great conversations. And destiny, what happens when you die? What happens? Is there an afterlife? And if so, what is it? There are four simple questions on paper, but they pack a lot of deep things inside of each one. And they can really come in handy when you're trying to understand what somebody believes. And I use that sometimes. And I say, I'm really interested in what people believe and understand. And hey, can I ask you four questions? They're big questions, but can I ask you four questions? And it really gets us into some great conversations. So that's something you can use. Ask those people, hey, what do you believe about these four things? I'd love to know you more and know what you think. It's a great way to also identify their misunderstandings and what they really believe. Most people in an atheist context have rarely been challenged to have to articulate what they really believe. In that detail, they've never spent the time and decided, okay, what do I believe? That's a great exercise for them, and it's a great exercise for us to understand them better and to know how we can help them move forward. So it's a really interesting concept. And for a 100% atheist, materialist, we all know what they should answer. Origin, they should answer that whatever science is the latest thing they tell them, they believe in Big Bang, evolution, purely by chance, just no intervention of intelligence whatsoever. Purpose, there is none. There's no purpose to their life. There's no meaning to their life. For morality, they should say there's no absolute morality. It's just whatever humans decide will work best to live in a community. And destiny, there's nothing, because we're just biological machines. And whenever we die, that machine stops and everything is over. But from my experience, it's interesting because not that many people, when we get into that, are truly atheists. And they're not always consistent over the four questions. And that really is great, because that helps us to dig deeper and get into some really, really good conversations about what they believe and help them move forward. So it's really important, like I was saying, the first point, to understand the people, their worldview, their beliefs, how they got to the position, how they got to where they are to believe what they believe, but also their fears and misconceptions. That's so important when you're trying to put up a ministry, create a ministry to reach out to them. And all that, like I said, it can help us to adapt our ministry. It can help us to adapt our communication to try to minimize and limit all those obstacles that people have and all those fears. So the second idea I wanted to share with you is to meet them where they are. Again, it seems simple, not always easy to do. I'm not talking physically. Of course, sometimes you have to do that. It's more about meeting them where they are in their understanding of things, in their beliefs, in their spiritual journey. We don't always do that. Sometimes we want to start way too far, and they're not there yet. And in an atheist context, that's what you're going to deal with all the time. Meeting them where they are in the way we communicate and share the gospel, meeting them where they are in the way we do ministry with them and for them. And the better we understand them, the clearer idea we'll have of the different steps they have to take, the different stages they have to go through to get to a point where they can understand the gospel and take it seriously. Something you could think about is, what does meeting people where they are look like in your context, in your ministries or in your churches, in your area, whatever it may be? But also, what are the different steps that an atheist would need to go through to get to a point where they could make a real decision about Christ, to follow him or not? That's things that are going to be very important when you're trying to reach out and trying to create a ministry to reach to atheist people. Something I've found interesting to understand, to better understand where people are at and understand their journey, their spiritual journey, is the gray matrix. I don't know if you ever heard of that. I think it's very interesting. The gray matrix, it draws a distinction between two different journeys that we have throughout our life. There's a vertical scale. Don't worry, we're not going to do math. Don't freak out on me. The vertical scale indicates knowledge. Very simple. That's your knowledge. How much the person is familiar with the teaching, the Christian teaching, with the Christian doctrine. And then the horizontal scale, that's an indicator of their openness, how open they are towards God, towards biblical truths. But it may also reflect how they feel about Christians. That's often the case. It's not tied to knowledge. The horizontal scale is not tied to knowledge. It depends on feelings and experiences they've had with Christians and with the church. And so this is the thing that helps us understand where people are at and understand that there are two separate journeys that we got to help them move forward to where they can understand the gospel. And an atheist, and this is important to understand, an atheist often needs to get to a certain point of openness before they can start to acquire knowledge about the gospel, before they can start to understand knowledge about the gospel. They got to work their way this way before they can start acquiring that knowledge. And that's super important. It's extremely important. Generally, an atheist will be down there, so in the bottom left corner somewhere, not open to the idea of God, and have very little knowledge, if none. Actually, usually they have false beliefs. They believe things that aren't true. They're actually like over here somewhere because they believe things that aren't even true. That's how I feel with some of the French people. So to meet them where they are, what we need to do is help them move on that horizontal scale, on that horizontal axis, to the point where they're going to be open to hear about the gospel. And that's important. Sometimes we want to go straight up, but we have to bring them to a point where they're open to hear about the gospel. And that can be a lot of different things, and that depends on your context. It can be building relationships and trust, and I think that's important in every context. When we're considered as a cult, building trust is so important. Until they start to trust us, they will not open to hear what we have to say. But it can also be showing love and serving in your community, so that the people see the church as a positive thing in the community. And it can also be answering people's questions. In our situation in France, apologetics is really huge to help people move, to start to be open to the idea of God, to where we can gradually help them go on that first scale so we can start going up and teaching them about the Bible. So it helps people be open to the idea of God. And so that can be many things, and I think everybody can try to find different things about that. So our goal is to try to bring people to that top right corner. That's our target. That's where people usually accept Christ as their Savior, when they get up there, when they're open to the gospel and they have enough knowledge to understand and make a real decision to choose Jesus Christ as their Savior. And I have several examples. I listed quite a few and then I took them off because I don't have time, but I'm going to list one. His name is Cyprien. He's like my best friend in France, and he was a non-believer, and I tried to do this with him. He was here and I was trying to do that. I was like trying to talk about Jesus to him, trying to share the gospel, and he would not hear it. He would actually pretend to get a phone call not to hear me talk about Jesus. He didn't want to hear it. He wasn't open for him. It was just crazy. Didn't make any sense. He loved hanging out with me. We had tons of fun, but he did not want to hear about it. And I tried for years. I tried to bring him to church. He didn't understand anything. It was just super weird. The music is kind of old school, and he was going, oh, with it. It was just so weird for him, and it didn't make any sense. And so I didn't bring him back for a while. It was just too far for him, and he couldn't understand. But then what happened is that I started challenging him on some of his beliefs, on some of those four questions. I started talking about morality. And I started challenging him, is that if you don't believe that there's a God, you don't believe that there's actually a real morality, an absolute morality. It's just whatever we decide. And we started talking about that, and he couldn't accept that idea. That's not possible. And so that started to push him towards being more and more open. And then one day, it's just our life, our testimony, me and my wife, when we decided to quit our jobs and become missionaries, he saw me go through all my school and get my master's and get the job I wanted after all those years. And then all of a sudden, give it all up to become a missionary. That struck him like crazy. He's like, wow, if it's that important to you, I have to understand what you truly believe and why it's worth this for you. And so again, our testimony moved him to an openness, to gradually we got to share the gospel. It took a while, but finally he accepted Christ and he got up in that top right corner. But we had to follow that curve. That's the only way. I tried to go straight up, did not work. When I followed that curve, he came to Christ. So both of those journeys are important in our ministry, and we need to try our best to understand and recognize those two journeys in people's lives and try to improve based on that, our communication and how we try to reach out to the non-believers and to the atheists. I think it's crucial for us in France, but I think it's going to be crucial, and it is probably crucial already for you in the United States as people are gradually sliding more and more towards the left side, unfortunately. That's what's happening. I mean, every time I come back, I feel like there's a shift. And it's scary. And so you're going to be in the same situation. You're going to have to work in the same way. And the Great Matrix helps you in many different ways. It can help you plan new ministries. That's what it did for us when we planned our J'y Pense events. It can help you evaluate how you're doing ministry and see how you can do better. And of course, it helps you understand better the audience. When you have that in mind, the double communication, it really does help you understand how to help people move forward. I think it's really good for that. So you can, with that, you can, it helps you meet people where they are and to make sure that we're communicating in a way that meets the needs of the people that are in front of us. That's also a problem, because a common problem is that we're communicating with these people as if they were here. Or the other way around, we're communicating with these people as if they were there. That's not as bad to me, but that's the other problem. That's often what happens. We invite these people to church, and they hear this communication for there, and they don't understand. They don't connect. It doesn't make sense to them. And I've tried that. I've brought people to church, and it didn't make any sense. They couldn't understand anything, and they didn't connect, and they didn't want to come back. So that's part of understanding our communication, understand those two journeys in somebody's life. I think one thing, I've had those conversations with people about these journeys, and I share about what we do and the J'y Pense we do. I'll talk about that later, and some of the events we do, outreach. And somebody told me, why don't you just do Bible studies with people? I was like, because they're not here, they're there. And in A, people don't want to do Bible studies. If you were taught at school and you believe that the Bible is just an old book of mythology, you don't care what it says. That's what they've been taught. They don't want to hear about it. They don't care. Or if you think, well, religion, oh yeah, that just creates wars and stuff. I don't want to hear about it. If they're there, they're not ready for that. When you get them there, then you do the Bible study, but not there. Or they say, well, you just preach the gospel. Again, until they're there, they're not ready to hear it. We got to get them to that point, open to the idea of God before they can ever understand and get to the gospel. If you want to do some research on the Gray Matrix, that's a book. There's a lot of stuff on that. I'm not going to go any more in details. There's a lot more information. They're talking about even trying to find a third journey. They're talking about that on forums and stuff. If you're interested, definitely check that out. You can take a picture. There's a lot of information in that book. So here's some questions that I think you can think about in your situation, in your context, to help you understand, better understand, and meet people where they are in their faith journey. One thing is, what do they know about God? Try to figure out, what do people know about God? What do they know and understand about the gospel? It's a whole different thing. I like this, and what do they think they know and misunderstand about God, about the gospel, about Christians, and about even the church? What problems do they face in their daily life? That can help us also communicate in a more efficient way. Are they open to change? That's also important. Where are they on that scale? Are they open to change? If so, great. If so, if they're not, why not? And try to figure that out and research into that. What could help them move on the open scale? That is so important. How can I get them sliding towards the right so we can get to the point where they can hear the gospel? And then finally, what could help them move on the knowledge scale? How can we help them acquire the knowledge that's necessary for them to move towards accepting Jesus Christ? So we have to understand that there's a lot of steps. There's a lot of stages that an atheist has to go through before they're ready to make a true decision for Christ. From our experience in France, first thing that has to happen is they have to go from atheist to theist. They got to go from not believing there is no God to, okay, there is a God. That does not make you a Christian. If you don't know why, talk to your pastor. I'm sure he'll be glad to tell you. But that is a huge, huge first step for any French person. Going from, I believe there's no God, there's no spiritual being, there's no spiritual world, it's all material, to, okay, there is a God, there is a spiritual world. And that can take a long time. And that's usually through apologetics and different things, and that can take a long time. Then after that, we got to get to the point, okay, you believe that there is a God, and we got to get them to the point they believe it's the God of the Bible. And that can also take a little bit of time. For you, that means you're like, well, yeah, but for other people, that's not as obvious. They have, when you say God, they think of all kinds of different things. So you got to get them to the point of believing the God of the Bible. After that, you got to get them to accept that they are sinners in the eyes of God. That can be a tough one. Your pride comes into play here. That can be very difficult. We've seen it over and over. I'm a good person. Over and over, that's what people tell us. And we got to get them to that point to accept with humility that before God, they are not a good person. They are a sinner. And then we got to get them to accept that someday they will face judgment before God. And they will be judged for their sinful life. And if we can get them there, finally, we can get to the good news that their only hope is Jesus Christ. And that five little steps can take a long time. We have to be patient, but we got to help them move towards that place where they can make that decision. Sometimes people want to jump, you know, they want people to jump from atheist to Jesus is your only hope. You know, get on your knees and pray after me. It takes time. They got to understand what's going on. They got to work through it for years sometimes when their worldview is so far away. It just takes so much time for them to get to that point. And I got to say, you know, meeting people where they are is not always easy. It's not an easy thing to do. It takes work. It takes a lot of effort on our part. And it requires us often to go out of our comfort zone, maybe way out of our comfort zone. But in most cases, it's really the only way to reach the people that are outside of the church and that are atheists. It'll be hard, and you'll have some crazy conversations. You will. You'll hear some crazy things. You got to try to keep a straight face. But that's what we're called to do. That is our mission. So in our context in France, I'll share a little bit about what we do, what's going on. We try to apply those two principles in every part of our ministry, in every different things we do. My wife grew up in France. She is French. I grew up in France, and just like her, I went to public school. I went to French universities. We both worked French secular jobs, which really, you know, is a huge help for us to understand the culture, understand where they're at and how they got to where they are. But we also, for our ministry, we study history. We study the French philosophers and thinkers that had a big impact on the way the French people think. And that really helps us to start right where they are and start to bring them along on that horizontal scale. I think another important aspect to be able to meet people right where they are is to have something for people no matter where they are in their journey. It's not always easy to do, but I'll give you an example. For example, you could have all kinds of different types of events and ministry. You could have one for, like, I want to say everybody. That means people interested or not, we don't know, just for anybody to, you know, to meet people, have contacts. And lots of churches do that, that's great. You can have something for people that are just a little bit curious, you know, want to know a little bit more. Then you can have something for interested people, so you go up a notch. And then when they have a positive view on Christianity, then you can really go a little bit deeper. And I'll give some examples in a minute. And of course, then you have to have something for the people that are open. And that's what we try to do. We try to do that in our ministry in France and our different things. So we have what we call neutral events. That means events that with no spiritual aspect. It's just fun meeting people, making contacts, may helping people realize we're not as weird as they think we are and not as scary as they think we are, demystifying who we are and our building. That's a big deal. And trying to get opportunities to invite them to one of the next steps. And this can be anything. You know, churches have Oktoberfest things and all that, trunk or treat and all those things. And that's great. That's what those things are. You know, meet people, have them come and meet people in the church. And we also strongly encourage anybody in our church team, in our church plant, to get involved in the ministry, in sports, get involved in association, whatever they can do to be in the community and meet more people and have more contacts. That's super important. Even with as few Christians there are in France, some Christians manage to only be around other Christians. We don't accept that in our team. You got to get out and you got to meet people and you got to invite them to things. And then you have your first step for people that are curious. They're curious enough to come to something that has a spiritual aspect, a spiritual idea to it. And that's where what we call J'y pense, our J'y pense events come into play. J'y pense means I think about it. And it's mainly apologetic based, just to answer the big questions that people have about God. This ministry was born 100% out of our experience in France. We've seen what has impacted people and brought them to a place where they could accept Christ and answer their questions. What's their obstacles? And we try to work all that into a ministry because many atheists think that it's weird. They think it's scary because they think we're a cult. And that's a huge obstacle for us. And so we start listing the obstacles and try to find ways we could work around them or avoid those obstacles for the people. For example, there you can see a little bit what it looks like and all the junk it takes to run an event like that. For example, they think we're a cult. So most people will not set a foot inside a church building because they feel like they're going inside the building of the cult. I don't know what they think is going to happen in that building, but they don't want to go. It's scary. And it would be easier for us to do it inside a church building if we had a big enough one. We wouldn't have to worry about renting and everything, but that's an obstacle. If we can get rid of it, so we're going to do it. So we decide we're going to rent a concert hall, a public place, a place where people have been for other things. So it's not scary. It's not weird. It's a context where they feel familiar. So we said, we're not going to do it in church. We're going to rent a building and they'll be more comfortable. Also, lots of people have been kind of taught through school that people that believe in God, have no good reasons to believe in God, and they don't have answers to their tough questions. So we said, okay, we're going to answer their big questions. We're going to give them answers to those questions that they think we don't have answers to. Lots of people have never been exposed to the gospel. So we show a testimony of somebody and see how the gospel has impacted somebody's life, how the gospel can change somebody. They think Christianity is kind of think it's like for old people because in their minds, they think of the few old people that still go to Catholic churches in France, and so that's what they see us like. So we try to, they think it's going to be super boring, and they're scared to be stuck in something that's going to last for hours, and that's going to be boring. People have told us that over and over. So one of our selling point is that it's short. It's only an hour and 15 minutes of your life. After that, you're free. You can go. Don't worry. And we try to keep it fun, dynamic, and keep it short. That's so important. And of course, the music, we try to do something that's culturally relevant, some music they enjoy that they won't feel, you know, weird about. They ask sometimes why we do music from other centuries. I don't know. We don't do that. We try to do stuff that they'll enjoy. And the last thing we had talked about was childcare. I was like, we can't do childcare. It's too complicated. There's not enough room. I don't have volunteers to do it. But we realized if these people are kind of hesitant to come, they're not going to go pay a babysitter to come to one of our events to say, okay. You know, as much as I fought against it for a while, but I realized, okay, if that's going to be a barrier, too bad for us. We're going to have to find a way. We're going to do it. And so we managed to set up childcare. So that's what it looks like. If you can see a little bit, there's worship music, like a concert. I mean, looks like a full concert. And then after that, we'll address, I'll address the question of the night, one of the big questions people have, apologetic question, and we'll finish with a video testimony, and sometimes a song just for fun to finish out. And so we try to meet them where they are in everything we do, culturally, but also in their thinking process, and that's super important for us in these events. For example, we know that certain philosophers have had a really big impact and influenced the French atheists in their worldview. So what we do is we'll go over that philosopher's reasoning and his ideas, and we'll talk about it, and we'll say, okay, we understand how you can hear this and it makes sense to you, and we understand where he's coming from and how he came to that conclusion. That's super important because that connects to them, because that's what they believe. They're like, okay, this makes sense. I'm tracking with what he's saying. I understand. He understands what I believe and why I believe it. And it gets their attention because they're into the thing. And so they're like, yeah, that's what I believe. And then I'll say, but okay, here's what I think is missing in his reasoning, or here's the problem for me in the logic he's using. And then after that, we'll work our way towards giving the truth, giving the right answer. So when we do that, they feel understood, and we start exactly where they are in their thinking process and help them move forward. And we've had some great feedback from that. Lee's best friend, she's not a believer. She's a lawyer, and when she told us that is great because, like, okay, they understand where I'm at, they understand what I believe, and they help me try to understand their position, and that's really effective. It's a very good method. That's what it looks like if you walked in during the music. Maybe crazy you, I don't know. We do calm the lights down when I speak because otherwise people would go have seizures or whatever. And at the end of the J'y Pense, what we do for the next step is we try to have discussion groups. We invite them to join groups and where we can work through their tough questions, work through their issues. That's very good. We use these books. If you're interested in doing that, definitely check out those books. It's actually called Tough Questions by Gary Poole. Very good books. If you are, you know, interested in trying to work with atheists, I would recommend you look into those books. There's 7 of them. They're very good. They're effective in just getting a conversation going and discussing these different things. And we look at different point of views. It's really good. And you can jump from one to the other. You don't have to follow this whole thing where they feel like they're being manipulated. You can just take any question any way and do it how you want. It's really good in that way. I think that's a great way, and it's an important step for us after the J'y Pense for them to get a little bit farther. It's still too big of a step for most people to come to church. Sometimes they do, sometimes they're not ready. And so we do that. And I think that'd be important for ministries in the States to also, it's good to have the outreach events where you meet people, but usually after that, it's pretty much invite them to church. But the more atheist people are gonna get, the bigger that step is gonna feel for them. And at one point, I think it's gonna be too big. So you're gonna have to find steps and different ways to help them work their way towards church. And I think that'll be very important. I think those discussion groups, maybe a J'y Pense type event, however you would do that, discussion groups would be a great way, like a ladder, to work a step your way towards being ready to go into a normal church. We did manage to get those translated. We're very excited about that. We have those 7 books for us. That's huge. It took a while. It was a lot of work. We are glad to have that. That's really cool. So our goal, of course, through all this, is to help people move down that scale to where they have a positive enough attitude or openness to start Bible studies. So that's what we do. Again, even the way we do Bible studies, we got to understand them, meet them where they are. They have no knowledge of the Bible. You can't say, okay, take your Bible at John chapter 2 verse something. They have no idea what you're talking about. They have never heard of New Testament, Old Testament. They don't know what the numbers have to do with anything. And one of the big fears of French people is to feel embarrassed because they don't know, they don't understand, and they're afraid you're going to ask them questions they don't know how to answer. So we have to be very careful about that and really meeting them where they are. So we have discovery Bible studies for those people that are just opening for the first time a Bible and discovery. Of course, finally, when they're open, when we get them to a point, the whole goal after that is to get them, invite them in the church, join the church if they're ready. And they can just meet the people, get in fellowship and be able to come and hear the messages and enjoy the worshiping with us and everything. So we have started a church. We planted a new church called Mosaic. We rent this little building. It can fit 40, 50 people. It's great for us. Outside, it doesn't look very good, but that's how it is inside. But we apply those same principles to the way we do church. We try to understand them, meet them where they are, do everything we can so they don't feel weird or out of place in the type of music we do, in the way we present the message. I speak them to them. When I speak to them, I have to explain everything because they have no background. It takes more time, but it's important. If they don't understand what I'm saying, if they don't feel like they're part of the conversation, they're not going to come back. And so it's harder. It takes time, but we do. I can't say, like King David did or like Joseph, whatever. They're like, what are you talking about? We do have to take time to explain everything. But then they do connect and they do follow the reasoning, and that will make a difference in their lives. So it's hard, but we do try to do that, and we try to get rid of any unnecessary obstacles that would make it weird for them or where they won't understand what's going on or not feel comfortable. If you take a moment and step back, especially for an atheist, and look at things from their perspective, they already have to go through so much to become a Christian. If you think about it and try to get in their shoes, they have to admit that they're wrong. That means that everything they believed up till now and people around there believe is wrong. That's hard to do. That you have to kind of swallow your pride. You got to come with humility and accept that everything you believed to now is wrong, and that's not easy. You're going to have some very difficult conversations with friends and family, like we talked about. Probably lose some friends and maybe lose contact with family members. You're going to have to accept that many people are going to see you as a weirdo. They're going to see you as being part of a cult, and you're being manipulated, indoctrinated, and that's no fun either. And you're going to have to change your values. You're going to have to change your morality. You're going to have to change your priorities in life. Give up some of your desires, maybe some of your dreams. And you could go on and on about everything that somebody has to change when they're an atheist before they become a follower of Christ, a disciple of Christ. And that all that just to help us understand all they have to go through to get to that point. So out of love and compassion, I'm not going to try to add any obstacles for them that would make it harder for them to come to church or to come to one of our ministry. And that's what we try to do. And you need to think about that too. I think, what can you do in your case, in your situation, to try to make things easier and get rid of any obstacles that you can get rid of for people to come to your ministries or to come to your church? We do that in the worship style. We dress casually. We talk normally when we preach. Everybody does what they want to do. We explain everything. Pretty much we're trying not to make things harder than they absolutely have to be for them so they can be comfortable and they can understand. Again, that's what we do, just trying to avoid obstacles that are unnecessary. We're trying not to ask them to change things that aren't necessary biblically. If they don't have to change that, they've had changed enough as it is, let's let them be a little bit. Of course, everyone's different. Some people will jump from one step to the other in different ways, and that's fine. If somebody's ready to, after a JPONS event, to come to church, definitely don't say, no. You got to go to the discussion groups first. No, we do that. We do have people. Sometimes they just come one time. They're like, oh, this isn't so weird. This is okay. And they'll come to church, and that's great. But many times they do need to go through all those steps. And we're just trying to help people get to a place where they can make a real decision, an informed decision to follow Jesus Christ. That's all we're trying to do.